Interview with Arthur Fleischer, May 21st, 2007, in New York City, by Kenneth Durr.
Did you do Yale for undergrad as well as
yeah.
law school?
Yeah.
Okay. Who did you study with at Yale in law school?
Well, Bill Carey. That's how I met him. Actually, I took a course. He was teaching at Columbia, and he taught a seminar in, I think, like corporate finance. And I got to know him there, and I was writing a book with him on convertible securities when he was selected by Kennedy to be the SEC chairman.
What kind of professor was he?
Meaning...
Professor, lively, did he engage?
Well, I don't know that Bill was compelling. He was more importantly a wonderful man of great integrity, but I don't know that he was, I just had him in a seminar, so, you know, where there was more dialogue and so forth. He was quite extraordinary in many ways. I mean, but one of the, ways that maybe was important to me, more as a lesson, I like to think, than anything else. When we did the first article on taxation of convertible securities that was published in the Harvard Law Review, he put my name first. I mean, which is quite extraordinary for a senior professor to do.
Were you still a student at this time?
No, I think I was working at then Strasser Spiegelberg,
oh, okay.
Now Fried Frank.
Oh, okay.
I used to spend my holidays writing law review articles. Things were a little different then than they are now.
Well, that paid off, I guess, in getting in pretty close with Bill Carey.
Yeah, well.
Now, I looked through his record, and it appears that he was in the OSS back in the late
I think so, right. Yeah.
I mean, was he the sort of fellow that you picture when you think Marine OSS, sort of a...
No, because he had a gentleness to him that wouldn't, you know... I mean, he was both gentle and a gentleman. I mean, a gentleman of the old school, you know, just... I mean, when he went to the SEC, he didn't talk to the press for... months, because he didn't think he was ready to do that. I mean, it's just, it's a world you can't even comprehend. But he was just unique in many ways.
Well, tell me a little bit about your decision to come along with him into the SEC.
Well, you know, I can't quite recreate it. I mean, Sam Harris, who was then... one of the senior partners, you know, Fried Frank Harris. And initially, in my first 2.5 years at the firm, I guess it was, I was doing both tax work, which I was interested in, and some SEC work. And I was probably, I mean, I was motivated more by, you know, the opportunity to work with Bill than anything else, I think. And then, you know, the respect that everyone had for the SEC. And so it was, because I think in my own mind I was somewhat unsure of where, what I wanted to do professionally, and this seemed like a great opportunity.
It appears that you were planning to stay with the firm, though, since you took a leave of absence.
Oh, did I? I don't remember.
I guess that's not important.
I don't know what that meant, you know. I don't think it bought me anything. Actually, in those days, at one point, I was making more money in the government than I was making in New York.
That's unusual.
Well, don't forget, when I started, they were paying associates $5,500 a year. And I was a war veteran, or not, no, I wasn't. I was a veteran, so I got $6,500 or something. And at that point, the government was almost competitive. And then when I became the executive assistant, I was a super grade or something. I don't know what you call it. So it was like maybe it was $15,000 a year or something like that. I don't, frankly don't remember.
Did you come right in as executive assistant?
No, I came in first. I was the legal assistant. There was no executive assistant.
You were legal assistant to Bill Carey.
Right, right.
What's your job description?
Well, it was hard to say because we were both new to the job, right? So we kind of, we created the situation, and it was a more, I suspect now the office of the chairman is accompanied by elaborate paraphernalia and an army of troops. But, I mean, there was myself and Bill. Eventually, when I became the executive assistant, I don't remember whether that was 1 year or 2 years, we brought in, we had another young guy who worked with us, Doug Martin, who was the legal assistant. And in the beginning, you know, while we were learning things, I remember one thing I did. I wrote a review of Louis Loss's treatise on securities regulation. And I used to sit in on the SEC meetings, which were, a lot of the time was spent in making registration statements effective, which was...
I heard the commission had to actually sign off on those things.
What?
Commission had to actually sign off on it.
I think so. I mean, I remember we spent a lot of time on that, which wasn't the most beneficial use of one's time. And we had legal opinions. I mean, and I don't remember the exact timing of things, but I helped Bill with the Katie Roberts opinion, you know, which was the seminal opinion on insider trading. I mean, there were certain events that were very important. It was like one was, and again, I don't remember the timing, the investigation of the American Stock Exchange and that whole change in structure, which was quite radical. You know, there was Katie Roberts. And then on the whole, and then we did work on the Investment Company Act. We did an Investment Company Act study that, and my dear friend Bob Munheim came down and worked on that with Gordon Henderson. And then, of course, the major effort was the special study of the securities market.
Right.
And I was sort of the liaison between the commission and the study group.
Well, you just went through my outline here. So let's back up a little bit.
Yeah.
And talk a little bit about priorities when Bill Carey came in. The Amex scandal had shaken up the financial world and the securities world quite a bit.
Right.
Was this, you know, at the top of the list, sort of dealing with the fallout from
that? Well, see, I don't, again, I don't hold me the details, but I remember Bill was very concerned about it. And there was a case. And I can't even tell you the name of the case that arose out of it. Maybe against a specialist firm.
Yeah, was it Silver?
Yeah, was it the Silver case or something? And it was argued by...
Or the Jerry Ray case.
Jerry Ray is what it was. It was Jerry Ray. And I do remember that, if I remember correctly, that Bill thought it important that the commission consider it thoughtfully but expeditiously to get the message out. I don't remember whether the commission suspended Ray or what they did, but I do remember it was argued by Shea Stadium, Shea Gould, must have been Milton Gould, I remember, argued the case for the Rays.
He argued it before the commission?
Yeah. And I don't even recall the substance of it very well, but it didn't seem like a very close case, if I recall correctly.
So it was easy to handle expeditiously, I guess.
Well, I think so. I think the record was there and so forth. And then I don't remember at what point Ralph Saul came in. They went through a whole restructuring, and the securities industry itself got involved to make sure that the exchange got its bearings and got better focused.
Ted Ethics.
Oh, is it? Okay, right. Ted Ethics, right.
Let's go to this guy. That's clearly the high point. And I've talked to a lot of the guys who were involved in that.
Right.
They remember it fondly. A number of them point to the fact that you were there as an interface between them and the commission in a way.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that role, and tell me a little bit about that team, what it was like dealing with that.
Well, look, it was an extraordinary group. I mean, in the first place, Mill Cohn is an amazing lawyer. Again, both from the power of his intellect and, his sense of integrity and his effort to be balanced and yet forward-looking. He had, he was imaginative. And right, Ralph was on that. Dave Silver, Gene Rotberg, Fred Moss. They put together, they had a very talented group of people with a lot of enthusiasm. We ran hearings, I guess, and I worked on the commission's response, if I remember. So, probably, tried to make it. Well, I didn't. What I tried to make, what the commission was expressing, was a balanced view. I'd have to go back and read some of that captivating prose again, but it was, and then working to the end, it ended up with the 64 amendments to the securities laws, which were very important. And I still have my pen on the wall that's when Kennedy had died, Johnson had become the. We all went to the White House. It was Manny swearing in, and then we got a pen from the president, et cetera. But that, if I remember right, and I'm jumping all over the place, but that was, one of the big issues was coverage of insurance companies. I think that's right. Because they had been exempt from regulation,
right.
And they were brought under the over-the-counter regulation, and that. And Bill actually wrote a book on that. He wrote
Before
that.
Or after?
No, afterwards. Okay. He wrote a book on the regulatory process, which, I had nothing to do with. He focused on, the efforts that were involved in getting that through. And that was, eventually. I mean, it was a very important piece of legislation, just as the special study was a critical foundation for many things that happened over the years.
Do me a favor. Well, I get the sense that this was a pretty exuberant crowd, the special study people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were... And I don't want to make this dichotomy, but it was like being in a private law firm. I mean, people worked all the time. They were very hard working. And, they had deadlines that had to be met. And after all, it was probably one of the most important studies that had gone on since the SEC was established. Because you're now... you know, what was it, 30 years later, I guess? And you're now re-examining a lot of the fundamental foundations of what is regulated, how it's regulated, and what the changes should be.
Do they need to come to you to for resources, for, you know, funding?
No, no, I didn't get in that. Okay. No, no, I was more on the... I mean, they didn't come to me for formulation of ideas. I would sit in on things and maybe chatter with them about different directions.
I know at the end, the commissioners, you know, Congress wanted it so that the commissioners were essentially supporting this report or something like that.
Yeah, and what did we do? We wrote a letter. I can't remember how we wrote some letter or something, didn't we? I think we took positions on various parts of it, or we may have said, you know, required further study or something. I didn't go back and look at it. But we didn't, it wasn't, I don't know that the study group got everything they wanted from the SEC. I just don't, I'd have to go back and parse what they wrote and what the commission said. But the commission then was quite, I mean, there was Bill, I think Barney Woodside was also superb, you know, just enormous strength. And was Manny on the commission then? I can't.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he went up to chairman.
Yeah.
Barney Woodside had been around almost from the beginning.
Yeah, and he was terrific. You know, just sensible, smart, knew the history of everything. He was very good. And I can't remember whether Senator Freer was there and Jack Whitney. I mean, people came and... but it was a strong group, very strong. I mean, you look at one of the great things about the SEC, it's always attracted, and it still does. I mean, look at the people who have gone down there now and over the last 10 years, both from within and without, very strong lawyers, people focused on public service, and totally... I mean, nothing is totally, but almost totally free from any scandal. Look, one of the things I find offensive now are all these procedural safeguards. That, you know, you can't have a commission meeting without it being open. I mean, all that nonsense that goes on now. It's just, yeah, it's ridiculous. And just, you know, and I was pleased to be part of it. We never had that. And actually, when I got there, the Congress... was almost intimidated in trying to pressure the SEC. I don't know what the backlash had been, but this notion of the independent agency was a very real notion. Never any White House interference. Nothing from the White House. I mean, at one point where they mediated this, there was a dispute between the SEC and the controller of the currency about who handle bank disclosures, so that I vividly remember, and we met in the White House. I mean, but that wasn't political interference. I didn't view it that way. That was a way of trying to bridge differences between two governmental agencies. But people were very sensitive. You know, you're... And it was also... it wasn't quite the same obsessive focus on every inner thought of every regulator. So, you know, you didn't... We had a few leaks during the special study with Eileen Shanahan, the lady from the Times.
Did she get to some of the lawyers in the group?
Pardon?
Did she get to some of the lawyers in the group?
I think so, yeah.
So the idea was to keep all of this sacred until the...
Yeah, oh yeah, people were... And on the whole, it worked pretty well.
Yeah. So if there were leaks, was the securities industry
No, I think I have some idea about where some of it came from, but you know, that was 100.
Were people in the industry concerned when they heard that this thing was going on?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, because they knew we got into the whole subject of commission rates, right? What was more basic? I mean, then they had fixed commission rates and floor trading, the whole, you know, all those issues that technology has overcome now, and the role of the regional exchanges versus the New York Stock Exchange. I mean, these fundamental structural issues were a part of what the focus was on.
Well, where did Kerry come down on all of this? I mean, did he have any particular interest? Did he see any of those structural issues as being somehow more important than others?
You know, that I'm not avoiding. I just don't remember that he was, you know, had a passion for one particular format or another.
Well, I'm just trying to get a sense of whether he had an agenda. Was something he wanted to accomplish as chairman?
Well, other than this generic idea of raising standards, he was, you know, integrity in the markets. And, you know, the other side of it, investor protection. And that was, I would say that was more his focus, and a disappointment if people weren't adhering to those standards. But I just don't recall in the, call it the structural area, whether there was a particular vision or not.
You said, I mean, he waited a while before he talked to the press.
Right.
When he finally did, and when he started talking to the industry, would he evangelize? Would he?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think so. Don't forget, he wrote, and you'd have to look at his speeches and so forth, but don't forget, Bill wrote that famous article on Delaware about, you know, Delaware being the lowest common denominator at one point. So he was not timid about trying to set a goal of higher standards.
You talked about Katie Roberts, too. And insider trading is just starting to come out with that decision.
Right.
My understanding was that was about 61 or so?
Yeah, it was early, I think, wasn't it? Yeah.
But you were in there at that point of this.
Yeah. Cycle. Yeah. There's an article in the Columbia Law Review that you may want to. Actually, the guy sent it to me. Let me see if I have it here. In any event, it was an issue, and never hold me to dates, but it was an issue of the Columbia Law Review that was dedicated to Bill. And there were various articles, and one of them was on Katie Roberts, and it actually, if I remember right, it was a reasonably accurate description of what transpired and so forth.
Yeah, I think I've seen that. My sense is, though, that that's a milestone. But then there's a while and nothing really happened. Was there a sense that things had been settled with Katie Roberts?
No. I think what the next big case was Texas Gulf.
Yeah.
And I must have left the commission by then. That must have been 65 or 6 or something like that.
Yeah, 68 is when it really...
Oh, was it 68? Okay. Yeah.
Well, what was your...
Well, one of the things... You know, I'm sure there was always insider insider trading, and it wasn't true in Texas Gulf, but it became an epidemic with the takeover business, right? Because then there's this quick money to be made, and Katie Roberts was a dividend when everybody sort of implicitly knew that dividend news was very sensitive. And then Texas Gulf was like a law school hypothetical because it was about a mineral discovery. There wasn't the same focus. You know, the way, I don't remember, but there wasn't the same thematic sense. I mean, when Stan came in, I don't know when these sensitive payment cases started. Was that the 70s? Okay, so that was a whole thematic thing. And then insider trading was another kind of, I mean, aside from, let's call it more common fraud, if you will, when the commission began consciously and deliberately focusing on certain areas. I mean, now we're going through option backdating and that kind of thing, or accounting nonsense.
You also mentioned the investment company.
Pardon?
You also mentioned the investment
company. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, see, that I even have less memory. They brought Gordon came in and Bob Mundheim came in. And that was also a structure stuff. But that must have been near the end of Bill's tenure. And I don't remember exactly when it was completed. And what, you know, and what came out of it. But it was also quite far-reaching. I mean, it was a basic structural study of how the industry was organized, you know, the level of fees, etc.
So it sounds like if there's a theme, you were talking about the themes, the insider trading, the options. If there's a theme here, it sounds like it was structure, looking at the structure of the market.
Yeah.
Which probably sells less newspapers.
Well, that's probably right. Less dramatic or interesting.
What's your day-to-day like working with Carrie? And I imagine that you, that was kind of a hothouse environment being in there with you.
It's amazing, but I don't remember. Yeah. I would spend a certain amount of time in the SEC meetings. But see, we changed I think at one point, and you know, you'd have to check this, I'm pretty certain we stopped this focus on talking about registration statements. We must have delegated that or something. And then you'd have meetings and you'd debate and talk about rule proposals, and enforcement proceedings were always a serious matter for review. And working on testimony, if Bill were testifying, it would be more, I don't know that I got involved, I don't even remember, on budgetary issues. I wouldn't think so. It may have been more when he was testifying on legislation and matters of that nature.
So you prepped him to go in front of Congress?
Pardon?
You prepped him to go in front of Congress?
Well, yeah, I'd work with him, right. And then I remember I'd correct the testimony, you know, you'd correct it, I mean, you know, you'd you could edit your testimony and so forth.
That's a euphemism, then, the correction part.
Right. Well, you wouldn't have corrected necessarily because, you know, when you're talking, and it's true of all of us, you realize how seemingly inarticulate you are. You know, yeah, and yes, and you know, it's always, so you make it more fluent, so it's
right.
More eloquent and so forth.
Who else did you work closely with during those years?
Well, Phil Loomis, for example, was a really critical intellectual bulwark for the SEC. He just had a lot of experience and a splendid mind. No, Phil, well, he may have been. And then he became, I can't remember if he was general counsel for a while. I'm trying to remember what his roles were. But he was terrific.
Did you see staff people come and make a case in front of the commission at any point? Was that?
You mean part of the enforcement? Yeah, I must have sat in on those meetings. I just don't have, you know, it's not anything that lingers in my mind.
Right. Why did you decide to leave the commission?
Well, because, you know, Kennedy died, and Johnson, I guess Bill resigned, you know, as you do when you have a new president. And he appointed Manny. I think Manny asked me to stay on, but I decided I'd been there then, had to be about 3 years or so. That I'd go back into private practice.
Had the commission changed significantly during those years? Was there a before and after that you saw?
Well, Bill was preceded by Ned Gadsby. Is that right? I think that's right. He was a decent fellow. I don't know that there was any level of excitement. I think Bill brought, well, it was all part of the glamorous Kennedy years, after all, you know. And so it was a time of all the, quote, bright young men who were running into Washington and so forth. But the staff was, when we got there, was strong. You know, there were very strong people, and it was strong when we left. I think there may have been, again, some additional layers and level of excitement that may have produced more enthusiasm for the agency. You know, young people going in, but I...
Well, it sounds like the special study was...
Oh, yeah, the special study attracted very bright people who wanted to do something special and over a limited period of time.
What did the rest of the commission, the other members of the staff, think about this thing going
on? Well, but don't forget, a number of the members of the special study had come from the staff, so I don't know that there was, I don't know whether there was tension or anything, because, I mean, people like Gene Rotberg and Fred Moss, Dave Silver, they had already been a part of, and Ralph was the head of enforcement? I can't remember.
I thought he came in for that.
Maybe he came
in. He'd been in the commission earlier.
Oh, okay.
Well, then, did you come straight back to Fried Franklin?
Yeah.
Thus the leave of absence.
Well, it wasn't a leave of absence. I talked to a couple of other firms. I didn't even realize I had a quote a leave of absence. I don't know what
it's
that.
It's in all your bio.
What?
It's in all your bio.
Is it?
Yeah, most definitely.
That's a funny expression. I don't even know what it means.
Were you at all specializing in mergers and acquisitions before? Did you?
No.
How soon after you came back did you get into that area?
Well, that was in some measure, it was a product of a few things, and in large measure, it was a function of the nature of the firm's practice. The firm, in the late 60s, represented Rickless, Rapid American, who was, and also Gulf and Western, and they were both serial acquirers, all right? And although I didn't spend a lot of time working with, I worked with also with Loeb, Rhodes, and Lazard, who were active in that business. And then at one point I wrote this article with Bob Munheim on acquisitions by tender offer. And I was asked to testify when the Williams Act was passed. And so all of those things began to converge. And then in the early 70s, I was working initially with Goldman Sachs and with Morgan Stanley. So we became one of the three firms, you know, Wachtell, Lipton, Skadden, and Fried Frank were the three firms that had the dominant position.
Well, you mentioned Gulf and Western being a serial acquirer, which right. is a nice phrase. Was it the conglomerate movement that was pushing a lot?
Yeah, right. Remember, that's when AT&T, Gulf and Western, Rapid American, these companies that were classic conglomerates.
So you were working with representing Gulf and Western?
Yeah, I didn't do that much work with Gulf and Western, but Gulf and Western was a client of the firm, and so was Rapid American. And IT and Lazard and as I said, Loeb Rhodes were both active in that business.
Well, now, the Williams Act, that was around 68, late
60s. Right, 68, I think, right.
And the SEC, of course, is going to be heavily involved.
Right.
Do you remember sort of what was going on at that point? Did you talk to people at the SEC about what was happening?
Well, not... I don't recall this. I was more involved. I was on that SEC advisory committee on corporate disclosure or something, and I was also on some NASD committee on new issues, and I was on the board of the stock exchange, the American. Arthur Levitt asked me to go on.
How did you land that spot on the SEC advisory committee?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I was asked a couple of times to go back to the SEC as a commissioner, and I didn't. I declined to do it. At one time near the end of the Nixon years, and then one other time when Bill Simon was, Ray Garrett was the chairman or something. But I didn't want to do that. But the commission, you know, the commission, like everybody was, and the staff were dealing with this new phenomenon, takeovers, and developing disclosure rules, and developing market regulation. So you were interacting with the staff, you know, they'd have views on disclosure documents.
Was there, well, some folks have portrayed the SEC as being slow in that area.
I don't know.
Showing a strange lack of interest. Was there any sense at that point that...
I don't know that, I mean, I don't know what they should have been doing. At one point, I wasn't involved with it. Well, who was the guy who set up a study group on tender offers, advisory group? It was a fellow who was CEO of a brokerage securities firm and then became chairman of the SEC. Who am I thinking of? I don't remember.
Well, let's talk about that Corporate Disclosure Advisory Committee a little bit. You don't know how you got...
No.
But what was your mandate?
I don't even remember what we did.
Yeah.
Wasn't it... Al Sommer ran it. It was this whole issue of integrating disclosure requests, so it was a more continuous disclosure stream. You know, it's a constant theme of reform in the securities laws. And Mill Cohn talked about that. He wrote a famous article on that. And that after all, is what the commission's been working on for the last 30 years. And... I mean, the ultimate is a continuous disclosure system, right, where everything that's material is made available in the marketplace. And we're not quite there, but also diminishing the burden on primary offerings, certainly, for seasoned companies. And I think we wrote a report, I guess. We must have written a report.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you had any recollections of the meeting.
No.
What the tenor was at that point.
I think Marty was on the committee with me. Marty Lipton.
Probably was.
I don't remember. And that was the same time I was working. The ALI put out a model code or something, and I was on that committee. And that had some of the same objectives, again, integrating the 33 and the 34 acts, so it was more a system of continuous disclosure.
And at the same time, you're doing your mergers and acquisitions.
Right.
Did it taper off in the late 70s?
What, M&A?
Yeah.
No, it didn't really... taper off until the late 80s,
yeah,
I think.
Sure
early.
Taper off in the early 80s.
Pardon?
It sure didn't taper off.
No, I think it was the late 80s, early 90s. It had a slight, it had a downward trend.
Well, the disturbing thing about the M&A in the early 80s, mid 80s, of course, is how it's being financed. Junk bonds and things like that.
Why was that disturbing?
Well,
that's what's going on now. No one finds it too disturbing.
I mean, that was the
propaganda, right? This is okay. The junk bond.
I mean, it was a relatively new phenomenon.
It was. Oh no, it was. You know, using leverage is not a new phenomenon, but using it in the scale and scope that it was being used was new. But it's now embedded in maybe somewhat more discipline right now, although there'll be others who'll argue to the contrary. But, you know, leverage is going back up to 6-1, sometimes 7-1.
There was a little bit of new interest from the SEC at this point with John Shadd. And this is
Shadd, that's right. It was Shadd who
area, so.
Yeah, Shadd started this committee of right, he had lawyers and bankers maybe, and they were looking at what was going on. I didn't think so. I didn't think there'd be radical changes in the structure. it's the financial area is an area that's very fast moving, populated by imaginative individuals, and sometimes, you know, the latest developments, derivative securities or hedge funds, whatever, it takes, they've got to settle in before the government can begin to first understand, evaluate, and determine whether to regulate. But in the takeover area, you know, the essence of what the SEC is focused on has been, as always, disclosure to make sure the information about whether it's a cash bid or a stock bid, is the information is available. And then there is more than, the commission has interjected itself more than it has in other areas of corporate activity. By specifying the time period that tender offers have to be open to people, by restricting market activity during the time that tender offers are going on. Yeah, these are all rules that the SEC has adopted over time, but, you know, it's all understandable. And has an impeded activity. You know, there were some things, you know, the commission had this so-called best price rule, and for a while people were inhibited in using tender offers because of a concern that compensation payments could be viewed as part of the payments for stock, and the consequences of that were quite draconian. So the commission just alleviated that by, you know, they adopted a rule recently and provided some comfort. So tender offers as such are on the rise again. But basically, the SEC has not interfered with the acquisition movement.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because it's the right, you know, if you have free markets, you know, what are they, you know, acquisitions are not simply, they're another vehicle for people to monetize their investments, whether going public or selling out. And I mean, it shouldn't be the SEC's business, in my view, to interfere with it, you know, as long as certain basic rules are being adhered to.
Well, one place the SEC has gotten a little bit involved is something I think I'd like you to clarify, is this idea of one share, one vote. I'm talking about having rules as to different classes.
Right. Well, they haven't abolished it. They've put limitations on the circumstances under which it could be done. And they did it by putting pressure on the exchange to adopt the rules. And, you know, they're still very important, significant companies with multiple voting shares. But the rules that have been adopted by the exchanges certainly limit that.
So in some sense, the SEC did put some pressure.
Yeah, but that's not, I don't view that as strictly an acquisition, that's not an acquisition activity so much as a fundamental governance approach, which the commission is obviously very involved in. I mean, and generally they do it indirectly, but take executive compensation, you know, and shareholder access. I mean, we're in a different environment now where the activists are trying to extend certain structural changes, such as shareholder access or majority voting. And the commission's been more responsive to them.
Well, I have one big question I want to ask you by way of closing up. It's fairly common, there's a pattern of folks working for the SEC early in their career and then going on and doing something else, maybe coming back, maybe not.
Right.
Looking back on it, how did your experience, at a fairly young age, working so close to the top of the commission, how did that affect the way your career went, the way you look at the work you do now?
Well, I don't know that it affected my career. I mean, what it was an extraordinary opportunity to work at an agency for which I have enormous respect and at a level of responsibility and interest that was truly gratifying. I mean, it's... you know, to me it underscored, and I appreciate you can't make universal experiences from the SEC, but I mean, one of the reasons I no longer find that, I don't find, and I never was, the Washington appeal the same, because I don't like things like, you know, all these prescribed procedures of open meetings. There's such a lack of skepticism and distrust about government officials. And I never thought it was warranted in the case of the SEC that I look back with fondness and pride that you know, I was a part of an institution that I think functioned the primary goal of working in the public interest, and we didn't need all this nonsense. I mean, I really find it's a level of cynicism that I don't possess even in my most despairing moments. And I don't know what feeds the voracious appetite that requires all this, but it's disappointing. It's really disappointing.
Did you stay in touch with Bill Carey after?
Yeah.
Did he go back into practice?
Well, no. He taught at Columbia, and then he was of counsel, or he had a role at Patterson Belknap. And I taught some courses with him. You know, he was teaching corporate law, and I did a few of those. And then I actually taught a seminar at Columbia for a while with another fellow.
Did you ever talk about old times with him at the SEC?
Well, I don't know that I don't know that I did that. But and I still see Catherine, his wife, periodically. You can see I have only a very impressionistic kind of memory. But as I said, it was challenging and exciting, and very enjoyable to be part of a group of committed individuals who really balanced and focused.
Well, thanks a lot, Pat.
No, my pleasure.